Welcome to the Leading Visionaries Podcast, featuring stellar conversations with emerging and established leading visionaries. Thanks for joining us today as we celebrate and spotlight the leading visionaries who are thinking differently, seeing new possibilities, have the courage to dream big, take inspired action, and create conscious change all around the world. Now, here's your host, Angel B. Hartwell.
Welcome to another episode of the Leading Visionaries Podcast, where we celebrate the ingenious, insightful, innovative, and inspired leading visionaries of our time and provide our listeners with world-class examples of the kind of courage, clarity, and confidence it takes to bring visions to life. This is your host, Angel B. Hartwell, and today we welcome our special guest, Anthony Coppedge. Anthony leads the vision for how business agility is infused in digital sales at IBM. He relishes the chance to sabotage mediocrity. He fuels his heart by mentoring, writing, teaching, and coaching a variety of audiences. He started applying agile values and principles from software development to marketing in 2009 at a software company and has been iterating and learning for the past 15 years how to reframe the dynamic between marketing, sales, and product management. And I have to say, before we jump right into this interview, is that Anthony has already demonstrated agility because we had all kinds of technical issues. So welcome to the show, Anthony. Thank you so much for your patience.
You are, of course, welcome, Angel.
All right. Beautiful. Well, I want to start our time together, Anthony, because this show is called Leading Visionaries. I want to start our time together talking about your leadership. And I'm curious about whether or not you were always a leader. Were you a leader as a child? Was it something that was mentored into you? What's your leadership journey been like?
First, I think that leadership is a choice. So anybody can lead from anywhere. It's not a position and it's not a role. There are leaders at all levels of organizations and throughout society. You see and feel and experience this when someone doesn't just take charge, but when you feel inspired to go where they go, to understand and see what's possible from their point of view, because they're probably doing a good job of seeing it from your point of view. So I think the very best leaders are empathetic. And I think that that kind of leadership is inspiring and practical. It's tangible. People can feel that. And so for me, that journey has been learning what it means to be fully who I am, which includes leadership and being comfortable in my own skin, coming past the childhood traumas of a very rough childhood and having to work past the lies that I used to believe to replace that with truth of who am I and what does that look like? And during that journey, leadership went from distinguishing it between the things that someone did in a role or especially management and actually being a leader, which is someone that people would choose to follow, to choose to go on a journey with. And that is what I lean into heavily now as a servant leader. I want to serve others well, and I want to do that in a way that makes them successful, not just myself successful. So it's primarily to give, not to get.
Beautiful. I love that. Well, you know, Anthony, I'm sure that you came up also in a culture where we've been in a change. I think we've been over the last 40, 50 years, we've been in quite a transformation in the way we look at leaders, what we expect of leaders, what leaders are now expecting of themselves. And that change for some may have been incredibly difficult. Those leaders who had the expectation that people were just going to toe the line. I'd love to have you speak about what you've noticed in your career around how to kind of bring in a new way of leadership when there's some old entrenched traditional type leader types that are in the organization.
And I would go back with the starting sentiment, this idea that leadership and management are not the same thing. So the leader is someone who sees what's possible and asks why not. And the manager is someone who sees what needs to be done and asks how soon, right? And how, maybe. So I make the distinction because you can be a leader and a manager, but not all managers are leaders. And so this is the distinction that was very important. If you look at the last 50 years, the Taylorism of the early, you know, Henry Ford kind of era, and then that led into, there's an economist who really talked about the idea the only reason a company was to exist was to generate a profit. And so Friedman's his name, and the Milton Friedman. And the thing I disagree with about that was that may have been a way to run an organization, but it wasn't the purpose. And it's pretty self-evident if you just pause, right? If you're thinking beyond the shareholder value, what's in it for those who invest in your organization, including your own team, yourself, your employees, right? If you think about it, no company ever sells a product and has their customer go, man, I'm so glad we helped them make quota this quarter. No one does that. So what ends up happening is we do a good job of providing, creating, and delivering value, then we get paid. So that if you're priced correctly and you have a good value for what you're offering, people are happy to pay that because what they're receiving to them is greater in value than what they're paying. That's why they would choose to use you. So profitability and revenue are a byproduct then of having something worth someone's time and attention. And of course, then their finances. So when you think of what he talked about, the only reason for a company to exist is to create a profit, I fundamentally disagree with that. Not that we shouldn't generate a profit. You want the companies you like working with to be in business next year and the year after is why you like working with them. So profitability is not bad. What we're talking about is the intent. And a really, I think, intentional leader, a focused leader who's really about that customer centricity will also be employee centric. They're people focused. And because of that, they have what I would call a span of care, not a span of control. When you talked about, you know, the toe the line, we would call that a command and control culture, mostly based out of a management belief, not a leadership belief. And so that type of management of inspect and get compliance can work to a point, but I would say it's always successful in spite of itself. It's never successful because of itself, because at the root of that is not trust. There's fear. People are afraid to make a bad decision, afraid to make a mistake, afraid to risk too much, afraid to push back, afraid to challenge. When fear is used, fear is actually a really good short-term motivator, but it is a terrible long-term master. So if you really want to shift, you have to look at the change you're talking about. And I would call it in the last 20 or 30 years has been this shift to a much more people focused. You might call it more squishy or more loving, but it's the idea of, hey, we really value who you are more than what you do. I want to help grow you inside this organization. And then even beyond, if that's your desire, because I want the best for you. And while you're here, if I'm giving you my best for you, my hope is that you'll give the best for us and we'll benefit from that as an organization. But it's that mindset that is so very different in today's most effective leaders, because they're not looking at what's in it for them. They're looking at what's in it for you. And as a result, they will do well and the company will do well and the clients will be successful. But it really does, I think, revolve around that others mindset, that servant leadership mindset.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I love this idea of the span of care versus the span of control. And when we think about working with people, I'm more in the entrepreneurial space than the corporate space. And one of the books that came out many years ago was the E-Myth.
Mm-hmm. And then the E-Myth Revisited.
And then the E-Myth Revisited, right. And there was this idea of everything needs to be systematized. And it was really this idea of like, people are not hamburgers, right? So when we put people into a system, we have to take it, you know, into account that they're not a widget. A person is not a widget.
Correct.
Right. And so I'd love to have you speak about some of your experiences of how you have managed and led yourself or have helped others to manage and lead and take into account this vast array of variety that exists in humans.
Angel, the candid background is that I didn't do it well. For a long time, when you're raised with a certain belief about how things should be, you will act out of your belief. Every person acts out of what they really, truly believe. Regardless of what they say, they will always act out of what they believe. You will see the fruit of that manifest somewhere. And I really believed that command and control was the way because it was all that was modeled to me. So I didn't do a good job of that. And it was learning and experiencing, well, why isn't this working, or why people leave, or why is this hard, et cetera. There were things I didn't understand. And I thought, well, I'm doing the right things. So if I'm doing the right things, but I don't always get the right results, it's because people aren't widgets. I had to come to that understanding, and it took, you know, therapy and counseling and things I did to grow myself and to deal with my own issues was an incredibly helpful part of then being more capable, more generous, more valuable as a leader for others. And in that space of growth has been this learning that has, I think, unlearned for me so much of what I originally believed in question. Why do I believe that? Is that true? What if? And that's a very powerful and challenging thing to do, because humans don't really like change. We like the idea of change, but we don't like the practice of it. So change is always hard in the short term. But what we want to do is say, but if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep getting what I'm getting. That's the definition of insanity, right? To expect to do something different, get a different result by doing the same thing. So having gone through that journey, I would now say I'm just much more kind with myself. I actually like and love who I am, not because I'm so great, but because I now know what I don't know, and I know to the extent I don't know it. And that makes you humble. That really takes down things, because no matter how smart or capable a person is, if you think you know, you are definitely wrong. So I would choose to serve others and say, well, I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do this, but let's go discover this together. And part of the agility that I bring, business agility, is that adaptive, responsive way of working that says we're really in a constant learning mode. Because if we learn better, we learn to improve, that's what not to do and what to do, what to stop doing, what to start doing, what to do less of, what to do more of. If we learn that, guess what? You begin to perform better. So you want the performance, great. Don't focus on the performance. Performance on the ability to learn and apply the learnings, and to do so either as a one person. I've run my own business. I've been the one person shop, you know, chief cook and bottle washer. I've done it all. And I've worked here like at IBM, where I have a huge span of care with people in 13 different cities across the globe in every time zone almost. So it's really great for me to be able to apply that entrepreneurship mindset and say, how can I help you own what you're doing and the way you do it? Because that ownership mindset doesn't exist only for an entrepreneur. It exists for anybody who believes that you want to focus more on creating value than on delivering an output. And every good entrepreneur wants to create value, not an output, because you don't succeed by doing a one-off. You succeed by doing something that others value again and again. You can do it one at a time, but that is a very slow, painful process. To scale anything, you will involve systems and process. The key is not to make the system and process override the people. Mm. Right? So people over process, but that doesn't negate the value of systems and processes.
I hear that.
Because people aren't widgets.
Yeah, people aren't widgets. They aren't hamburgers. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to let people know where they can find out more about you. And we're going to dive in a little bit deeper about this idea of, you know, building an environment and a culture that's a learning culture. But right now, listeners, are you a leading visionary or in the role of leading other visionaries? Consider joining our community and sharing your feedback and takeaways from each episode. We invite you to join us and support this podcast by making a donation at leadingvisionariespodcast.com. Interested in finding out more about how you can receive support for getting your vision out of the air and onto the ground? Well, you can apply to qualify for a complimentary conversation with me or a member of my team by clicking the Connect with Angel button on the website. Be sure to share this show in your own spirals of influence with the people who you think might benefit from our content. I want to say a huge thank you to all of our listeners who are downloading, rating, and reviewing. We're now downloading in 26 countries, which is exciting. And we're welcoming thousands of downloads from all over the world. I want to shout out this week to our listeners in France, Nigeria, Russia, and we might as well say hi to the people in Texas where Anthony is. And we will be We will be right back with Anthony Coppedge.
The Leading Visionaries podcast is brought to you by the Creative Age Consulting Group. Are you the one who thinks differently, who is called to create a significant conscious change in the world, who is seeing and dreaming of a better way for your industry, your community, humanity? Creative Age Consulting Group is hired to guide leading visionaries just like you who want to break through the static in order to clearly express and confidently enroll support for their vision in a way that makes it inevitable that it will come to pass. Your word is your wand, And as the leader, your ability to articulate and communicate your vision is essential to its materialization and monetization. Please enjoy with our compliments a free copy of the book, Be Heard by Millions and Live Your Destiny, which was a number one new release in three categories to get you started. The book is yours by visiting gift.leadingvisionariespodcast.com.
And we are back with Anthony Coppedge. Before we went to the break, I told you I'd let you know where you can find out more about him. We're going to give you his LinkedIn profile link in the show notes. You can find him there on LinkedIn. That's the spot where he most enjoys engaging. So you can just check that out in the show notes if you want to reach out to him. Before we went to the break, you were talking about learning and adaption. And one of the things that I found interesting about the first half of our conversation there, Anthony, is that there's this invitation to be curious, right?
And, absolutely.
And it seems to me like in the industrial era, there was a lot of removing curiosity and removing critical thinking through the education system. So how do we help everyone, the leaders, the managers, the team members, the clients, customers, how do we help everyone to become more curious and more aligned with the truth that nobody knows, none of us know. And we're all just making it up as we go along and we're learning.
Yeah. To be curious does not mean that you guess at everything. You can make educated guesses. You can use data, both qualitative and quantitative. You can surmise off of historical patterns. You can learn and then apply that. But no one really knows. So you have to figure it out, as you said. The root of that is trust. So if you want to do this in the healthiest way possible, you have to build a culture, a community, and a consistency of trust. And it has to be demonstrated, not just spoken about. So it's not the little pithy sayings on the wall or the signature of the email that says something clever. It's really, what do people experience, both as your customers, as business partners, as clients, as employees, as contractors? What is their experience? That is your culture. And so your culture is not what you say it is. It's what people say it is. And what they say it is what they experience. So the five things that really make that possible were discovered through a process that Google did, actually. They were trying to figure out. They had these high-performing teams, and Google's huge. And they said, what are the things that are making this work? And they ran this very long program, and they figured out there were five things. It's psychological safety, dependability, structure and clarity, the meaning of work, and the impact of work. And those five pillars, if you would, were the things that mattered most, like far and away. So if you take the first one, psychological safety, that means if I'm going to be curious, I cannot be penalized for my curiosity. In fact, I need to be rewarded or at least encouraged to ask why and why not. Why would we do that? When I at IBM have situations where someone says, well, so-and-so said I need to do this, and some executive said something, I go, great. Why'd they say that? I don't know. Well, let's go ask them. Because before we commit to something, we always remember you have a finite amount of people, time, and effort that you can focus on. We don't want to add more without first subtracting. So I remember in middle school learning the order of operation, and pardon the math for a moment, but remember when you had the little parentheses and you had to do the work inside the parentheses before you did the multiplication for the next set of parentheses? Well, it turns out to be really useful in life. And I didn't like algebra. It's actually useful. I use it every day and I didn't think I ever would. But the beauty of that is that if you have good processes, good people, and bad systems, and they're inside that, if you don't subtract bad systems, when you go to scale something, you will multiply everything inside those parentheses. So if you have bad systems, guess what? When you scale it, you will scale the bad systems. If you have bad processes or poor processes, that'll scale too. So scaling is, it's dumb in that it doesn't understand what to scale, it just does it all. So the key is the art of subtraction is far more important than the science of multiplication. And what I want leaders to understand at every level of an organization is that you have to figure out what not to do before you figure out what to do next. Because there's only so much of you and your team to go around, whether you're a single solopreneur or you have a huge enterprise. there's only so much. And in his book, Atomic Habits, James Clear talks about the idea that I find very attractive and very practical, which is the best way to optimize upside is to first reduce downside. Subtract the stuff that's low value, subtract the stuff that's waste. And what you're left with is not only free up free time, you got time back by doing that. You're no longer wasting. Well, now by not doing that, you optimize potential for upside. And he says it's so much easier to reduce downside than it is to create new upside. So before you're thinking about how do I do more? Well, no, how do you do less? And how do I empower my people to do that? And his book, Turn the Ship Around, a former U.S. Navy retired captain, David Marquette, says that most organizations push information up to authority, right? So if you want something, you got to send the report. You got to go get permission. Information goes up to authority. What he found in the Navy, and his book is incredible, he said, flip that. Push authority down to where the information's at. So in his situation on a submarine, the helmsman who drives the sub, instead of saying, Captain, permission to submerge a seat 500 feet, 500 feet submerge, aye, right? There was that process. We've all seen it in the movies. What he says is, helmsman says, Captain, I intend to submerge the sub 500 feet. I've checked our depth. I understand where we're going and we've got clearance. Make it so, right? He pushes that down because it's intent-based leadership. So what you want to see in that environment is a team who trusts each other because they're all very good at what they're doing and they're willing to learn from each other. And while there is a person in charge, the person in charge is not there to tell you what to do. They're there to support you in what you intend to do because you're in that role for a reason. You're trusted. You're empowered. So that psychological safety, be dependable. Do what you say you're going to do. Have structure and clarity. Brené Brown says being clear is kind. And I so agree with that. The meaning of the work. Is the work meaningful or did you just produce another widget? It doesn't matter if you do another one. Man, that's really hard to get behind. And then the impact of the work. What happened because we did this thing that this executive asked for? I have a fun story for that that'll help, which is this. I once had a team that I first came into the company and it was to apply agility in a marketing area. How do we become responsive and adaptable and get faster turns on the market? How do we do that better? Because they weren't great at it. And so when I came in, I was told by the employees, yeah, your boss, Anthony, guess what? He likes to come in with last minute ideas. So that always throws us off and then we're late on everything. I said, okay, well, for the first 6 months, I want us to go ahead and capture all the things he's asking and we'll work it in. And I know you don't like that idea, but if you'll trust me, what I want to have happen is have data to show the impact of the work we do when it's last minute versus when we plan it. And we just need data. So for 6 months, we did this. And at the 6 months mark, I took three slides and a PowerPoint to the executive leadership team. And my boss was there. And I'm like, so let me just say, there's people's names on everything you're about to see. That the idea is not to shame or blame anyone. It's simply to say, this is the accountability. And on the first screen, I showed all the work that we had planned and the impact of it, the performance of it that we were able to measure over time. And guess what? We did fairly well. So we had our metrics were on the upswing. We were doing a lot better. And I tell this story in more detail later another time. But in other words, it was going well. But we also did the work. He came in and said, got to have it last minute. I have this great idea. And I said, here's the performance of those. It was 1/5 on average, the performance of things we planned. So his last minute ideas were not well baked. He had a great idea. And I said, you know, the thing is, you might actually have a great idea. We'll never know because we don't have the time to execute on it in such a way that we could see if it could be great. So because we're rushing, A, we're not getting great results out of it. And B, it's limiting how much we can do that we do plan. So you're actually double foul here. One is the results of that work are low. And two, it's preventing us from doing work that has been proven to be of higher value. So in the future, I said, if you choose to come in last minute, we'll still say yes, but you are now going in consciously and understanding that you're making a choice that is probably going to have a lower output, a lower outcome. So if that's okay, we'll do it, but we're going to come back and ask you why. And that culture of trust meant that from the lowest person in the organization, you know, so to speak, to the highest person, everybody could ask anybody anything. Because if we couldn't have that, how in the world do we become curious enough to ask, should we or shouldn't we? Can or can't we? And it created a way for us to change the culture from, well, we got to do it because a bigwig said it, to, hey, we actually want to provide better value. And we have some data that says this is not great value. Can we talk about that? Can we put it in our backlog and maybe get a couple of weeks to work on that and not try to rush it? Because we think you may have a good idea, but we want to do the due diligence to make sure it's going to have the best chance for success. These are the kind of things that what I'm talking about, a span of care, puts in front. Because you're more interested in the outcomes and the people creating those outcomes than you are in delivering an output or following a process.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I want to, you know, for our listeners who are at varying stages, some of our listeners may be in, you know, positions like yours, and some of our listeners may be, you know, solopreneurs or small entrepreneurs. One of the things that I'm hearing here is the importance of honoring that the visionary may have, because this show is called Leading Visionaries, honoring that the visionary may have a vision, right?
Of course.
And simultaneously creating the structures and the clarity that allow for the visionary to be honored, but all the people that are making the vision come into reality to be honored equally as well.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things I do in my own business, because I'm a visionary and I constantly have like, let's do this, you know, which then burns me out or burns my team out. I've learned to have what I call my cold storage, and I put stuff in the cold storage and I say, that's a great idea to the divine source of great ideas. Thanks, great idea. And then I put it into cold storage, and I actually have projects that have been in cold storage for 15 years. So, all right, Anthony, we've only got a couple minutes left. I'm really grateful for the time that we've spent together today. In the last couple of minutes that we have, I'd love to have you speak briefly about how, like, what's your vision for how major corporations who are building internal cultures can potentially impact the external culture?
I think there's a responsibility first in any community. So everybody's localized somewhere. Even global companies have a local presence or multiple local presences. Like I said, I have 13 sales centers across the globe. So I want to see how we make first in our center, in those centers that I've got. How are we doing with each other? And how are we doing with our families and our friends and that? If we can do that, and there's things that are important to that, that are unique per culture. So what happens and what we do to support one culture can and should be different from what we do to another, because the needs are different. The culture is different. So I think if you want to make an impact, it starts with your family, then your friends, then your neighbors, then your community, then your locale, then your region, then your country, then the world, right? So I think being a good steward has a lot to do with how well you do that in a localized way first. And if you do that well localized, then you can have the ability to spread and grow that. But I think you have to start small and intentional. But the key is absolutely be true to the cultures you're in. Don't impose your culture on them.
Beautiful. I love it. Well, thank you so much. And so much for your agility today. I'm going to say thank you again to our listeners as well. Listeners, we do love feedback. Please let us know what you think of this show by joining our community, sharing your takeaways, asking questions, or submitting guest suggestions. You can weave your visionary thread into our fabric by opting in on our website at leadingvisionariespodcast.com or by interacting with us on social. Look for the handle at Leading Visionaries Podcast on all the major platforms. Thanks for tuning in. Keep your eyes, ears, and hearts open. And remember, you are here to create conscious change.
Thanks for tuning in, downloading, and listening. Be sure to rate and review Leading Visionaries on Apple Podcasts and share with other people you know who can benefit from today's episode. Leading Visionaries is the premier podcast series for informing, activating, and inspiring the leading visionaries who are called to create conscious change. And know that now is the best time to welcome wealth and cultivate a web of collaborative support to bring their vision to life. We invite your feedback and guest suggestions and invite you to subscribe to our mailing list to be notified of new episodes at leadingvisionariespodcast.com.